This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow, and we are all using lots of strategies to cope these days. On the surface, we're just trying to keep up with the latest information and comply with uncomfortable and ever-changing rules of behavior. At the same time, we want this to make sense at a much deeper level. In moments of catastrophe, we often turn to the collective imagination, myth, and poetry. And a great poet will ask questions that get to the rawness of suffering, hope, and despair to expose a hidden truth. And we thought it might be time to have just that kind of conversation on our show, so we invited Jackie Shelton Green back to talk with us. Jackie Shelton Green is our state's poet laureate. Welcome back to The State of Things. So good to talk with you, Jackie.
Hi, Frank. It's wonderful to be here with you.
All of the contradictions that this has raised, I don't think I've ever faced quite so many contradictions in a particular kind of event. And that's great for poets, Jackie, I'm sure. But for the rest of America, we don't like contradictions, you know. So, and I'm thinking about this time of year, especially this time of abundance and new life, at a time when we're all having to stay behind closed doors and shut it all off. What thoughts are going through your mind in this moment?
Well, first of all, Frank, I've been thinking about shelter and what shelter means quite a bit. And I realize that I'm sheltering under the umbrella of gratitude. And I've been thinking a lot about one line in the poem that W.H. Auden wrote, his poem September 1, 1939, which was the poem's title, it's the date of the Nazi invasion of Poland. And I'm reminded that that one line was his way of summoning the better angels of our nature, even as this darkness is descending. So I'm thinking that right now in this moment in history, this also is a darkness of a different kind, but that gloom is still real. And to a very terrifying degree, I believe that we're on our own and that all we really do have is each other. And that one line is, we must love one another or die. We must love one another or die. The poet's truth, today's truth, as we collectively think about what it means to be shelter, to offer shelter, to embrace shelter, and to define shelter on our own terms.
In that ultimate poetic truth, and of course the contradiction, and you stated it even more explicitly, that we're on our own and we need each other more than ever.
Right, right. And I think that art, the art that humans have made from century to century, has always had one thing in common, and that is that it's dealt in one form or another with sorrow, regret, shame, isolation, and longing. Since these are the chief constituents of art down the ages, I've been thinking a lot about how poetry, the writing that I do, the art that people are making right now, the choreography of silence, the choreography of the absence of voices and spaces, that it's standing as a record for how we legitimate despair and how we legitimate it so that we can replay our misery back to ourselves with more dignity. I'm thinking about people who are dying alone and families that are pressed against windows. Now I've kind of went astray there, but
no, not at all. I just wonder where some of this comes, because I think about the trajectory of art. I think about sort of the middle of the 20th mm-hmm. century when, I don't know, you can tell me that this is my view of things, but it got very subjective, a little bit self-centered, an idea of expressing the artist's own inner turmoil. And there were moments, it seemed to me, that it lost contact with a larger kind of communal sense of any of the things that you talk about making sense of suffering, about trying to embrace grief so that we can move forward. First of all, was that happening, and do you see a change now? Are things changing now? That may not have been your perception back then either.
Well, I think things have definitely changed. I mean, I've lost so much revenue for the past few months mm-hmm. and all of my traveling across the state of North Carolina. Like so many artists, musicians, people with upcoming gallery exhibits and poetry readings, it's all been canceled. But there's technology, there's podcasting, and we've all embraced this new way of being in the world. But I believe that art has always been a way that helps every community at different levels process the world that we live in. And sometimes I think that we think of art in a very Eurocentric, broader context, and I'm thinking of art in a very simple way of how faith-based organizations right now are redefining what it looks like to gather in congregation. Neighborhoods are redefining what it looks like to be in constant art giving by leaving notes on trees or under stones where people can go by and read them. So I think these expressions are definitely not lofty, but I think we're finding new ways to make art accessible. And I think what's going to happen is there's going to be an amazing productivity of art making. The space, the solitude, the time that some of us are fortunate enough to have to be still, to think about how we are being inside of all of this.
Do you think this in some ways would democratize art? Because maybe what I was getting at earlier was that art had I'd felt that it had lost connection, that it was mostly about itself, and that we had lost connection with art. If more people felt that they were artists, that whatever else they did, they could also express themselves in these other ways. Coming out of this, we've had time. I've seen examples of it. I'd like to be able to share this with other people. Do you expect that kind of democratization that could make art and therefore the fruits of art more broadly available?
Well, I think it's definitely happening. It's happening in conversations where we are constantly becoming historians, researchers, documentarians, because we're all bearing collective witness to this interruption in our modern lives. And we're not thinking about ourselves as artists, but we have become the documentarians of our own lives. And I think that's very, very important. I think it's empowering for communities to think about how they will tell, package, retell their story of survival, of burying their dead, of uncovering some things about themselves. It's a time to dig out the old photographs and tell our stories to each other. But yes, indeed, I do think that we will see a revival of a passion for life that's very, very different. And what I'm hoping that when this pandemic is over, that we as a nation might rethink how we're so infatuated with the ideal of our rugged individualism and accept that the world is very indeed interconnected and we're becoming more and more interconnected. So I think that every day people are making these connections. I hear them in conversation with friends. I hear them in podcasts. I hear them in interviews with several people doing virtual interviews. So, you know, this is a sad time, but it's also, I've thought about how for a lot of artists who feel like we've been failed in our real life communities, that it's art that gives us the option of assembling a tribe for ourselves. How we draw members across the widest range of time and space, and how we're blending with authors and architects and composers and painters and poets. If we can go in and glean the ripeness inside of this wound and remake it, because we are makers. And North Carolinians, you know, we come from a rich tradition of making, you know, folk art and the visual arts and the literary arts. So I think that ripeness is very much there. I think self-isolation is very new and threatening for so many people. And I know that the fear of isolation is also very paralyzing for some people. But there is a gift in the middle of it. And I do think that community building is going to be strengthened. And I'm also hoping that we can realize that a community is only as strong as its most vulnerable citizens. And I hope that we can think about how we divide ourselves and how now is the time to think about drawing on, you know, this connectedness of people that we might not be thinking about otherwise.
What kind of work, what were you working on before all this or during all this? I know you're working on a new album and all of that. Give us an idea of what was going through your mind before this actually became full-blown.
Before this happened, I was in Asheville, North Carolina, doing a two-week residency with public school children and public audiences. And the governor shut everything down, and I came home. So I was traveling the state, interfacing with people. And the most interesting thing about all of this for me as the poet laureate, as I have been traveling across the state of North Carolina, I've sort of been whistling Auden's one line, "We must love one another or die." And I was really thinking about the social constructs of racism and classism and ageism and homophobia and all of the other boundaries that we've created. And I'm hoping that in all of the conversations that I was having with different age groups and different community constituents who look different than each other, that now they may have gotten what I was thinking about. What does it mean to be in a collective situation where we're all experiencing the same thing at the same time, but of course very differently? So that was what I was doing, traveling the state. And yes, September, I have been in the studio, happy to say, working on my first album that I'm very, very excited about. And we were able to finish it up in the middle of all of this. And it's ready. We're just hoping for the right time that we might release it. It's due to release in June. And I'm journaling. I'm trying to capture the vibrancy of this moment for me. Even in loss, there's such a benefit of what we glean from the loss and what we can hold and carry on. And that's where I'm at, where I am. I'm trying to glean as much affirmation, as much love, as much compassion and generosity and gratitude. I started out saying I'm leaning into this with gratitude. Gratitude that my voice has been held, acknowledged, celebrated by so many people across the state.
Well, some of those. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I do want to leave time because I know that some of what you're talking about may be embodied in one of your newer poems. I think that's on the album, "The River Speaks of Thirst."
Yes, "The River Speaks of Thirst" is the title of the album. And I think this is where we are. We are that river sitting in the middle of this thirst. The river speaks of thirst. Oh, how I want to sit here and sing into your night. Lean deep inside the this river where blood is born. Sing a litany into this open book of your story, my story. This river shrugs its belly, births kindness for all things yet to be born. Oh, how I want to sit here and feast from your wet palms. This river, wounded heart, holding the locked secrets of ancestral crones. Kneeling, feeding the doorways of all your, my, drowned seasons. Oh, how I want to be born inside this river, as a lone, wild burst of yellow, becoming more and more an eclipse of wind, becoming more and more an eclipse of freedom. We are all this flow. We are all this river where blood is born. Oh, how I yearn to empty the veins of my life story into this nameless, pregnant river. Like you, like me, it also struggles to remember its own birthing, its own flow. Why deep story that swallows forest, that births newness inside the whisper of this story, this hungry thunder. Oh, how I yearn to bear such freedom. Hold the stones, the bones, the skeletons of moon, sun, dust, inside mouth, womb, spirit, tomb. Conjure a dervish of primal, ancient becoming. We swallow more and more of this river where blood is born. We shapeshift into the sweet shadows of this river's dance, this river's prayer. Howling when it run backwards, remembering other names, other skies, other songs, its birth and song.
The River Speaks of Thirst, Jackie Shelton Green, North Carolina's Poet Laureate. Jackie, always such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Enjoy.
Jackie Shelton Green, North Carolina's Poet Laureate, founder of Sister Write, instructor in the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. Her album of music and poetry, The River Speaks of Thirst, is scheduled to be released on June 19th. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. On our next episode of Embodied, we want to hear your stories about how the fight against COVID-19 has influenced choices, rituals, and your relationship with death. Have you attended a virtual funeral? Are you talking with families about family members about a living will? You can share your experience through text or a phone call at 919-980-5419, 919-980-5419, or you can fill out a survey at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hullab-Mormon, Kaya Findlay, Stacia Brown, and Josie Taurus is our intern. Jenny Lawson, our technical director. Al Widarski also helped engineer the show today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.